Good afternoon, everyone. I think we'll go ahead and get started. It's officially 12:10. Welcome to the Library Environmental Series, Farm-to-Table Dining, Local Restaurants Using Local Food. For those of you who don't know me, I am Heidi Schroeder. I am a member of the Library Environmental Committee, and I'm a librarian here at MSU. We're really excited to have three panelists today, two from local restaurants and one from a local farm. They're each going to talk for about 10 minutes, and then we're going to open up for questions. So start thinking now about what questions you have for these presenters. I'm going to just briefly introduce each of them, and then Adam's going to go first. So our first speaker will be Adam Montry. Adam owns and operates 10 Hens Farm in Bath, Michigan, with his wife, Drew, and their two daughters, Lydia and Allison. They've been farming in this location since 2007 and market their vegetables and fruits to a number of Greater Lansing restaurants as well as two other farms and year-round at the Bath Farmers Market. They grow outdoors from April through November and year-round in their 17,000 square foot hoop house. They're also involved with Michigan and U.S. farming communities through Adam's position in the MSU Department of Horticulture, and Drew's with the Michigan Farmers Market Association. They are so happy to be part of the Lansing food and farming community and wouldn't want to be farming anywhere else. Next, we have Nina Santucci. She's the co-owner of Red Haven Restaurant and the Purple Carrot Food Truck in Okemos, Michigan. Nina and her husband, Anthony Malley, opened the Purple Carrot in May of 2011. With a focus on sourcing locally from local area farmers and artisans. After a successful first season, they planted roots with opening Red Haven, this restaurant and bar is named after the Michigan peach. The menu highlights all four growing seasons of Michigan with an ever-changing selection of small plates and a bar program, which includes a diverse selection of Michigan distilled spirits and craft beers. Finally, we have Jason Blastick, who is here for Nick Gavrilides from the Soup Spoon Cafe. Jason has been the executive chef at the Soup Spoon for over 5 years and uses local sources for fresh produce throughout their menu offerings. Chef Jason has a culinary arts degree from the Culinary Institute of America and has worked in some of the highest ranked kitchens in the U.S. Chef Jason focuses on local product and its best experience on the plate on one of his amazing dishes. The Soup Spoon is a full-service restaurant located in the heart of East Side neighborhood in Lansing and has been open for 8 years. The Spoon, as it's lovingly referred to as the locals, has a philosophy of offering five-star service in an all-inclusive atmosphere. The Spoon focuses on fresh products presented in creative and unique ways that are accessible to a wide range of expectations. We're so pleased to have all three of you, and Adam, we'll start with you.
Everyone here all right in the back? Yep. All right, if you can't, just holler or wave your hands or something like that. Do you want to flip slides? Is that what we... Oh, you're on it.
Perfect.
Head of the game. We usually don't have a slide flipper. Thank you guys all for coming. Again, I'm Adam Montry with 10 Hens Farm in Bath. Does everyone know where Bath is? Anyone not know where Bath is? All right, that's changed in the last 7 years or so since we moved in. People used to be like, where? So my wife and I own and operate 10 Hens along with three other employees, and we've been farming there, like you said, since 2007. We started with a very small, well, not very small, but about a 3,500 square foot hoop house, knowing that we wanted to farm year round. And for those of you who don't know what hoop houses are, just picture in the bottom right there, you can see it with our oldest daughter. It's basically a greenhouse, but we grow directly in the ground and we don't add any additional heat or additional light, and we're able to harvest most years, 12 months of the year. Last year was pretty tough. Well, two winters ago was pretty tough. We did about 10 months. This year we had about 3 weeks where we didn't harvest. And the reason that we do that is, being in Michigan, you know, it's really hard to try to have all, well, in our mind at least, to have all of your income come in a basically five to seven month period. So what these allow us to do is have farm sales year round, and have income coming in year round, and also keep some of our employees around year round as well, so that they can, you know, not go away and come back and go away and come back. And, you know, like any of you guys know, or anyone who owns a business, if we can keep our employees and not have to retrain them to do the same thing, or new ones every year to do the same thing year after year, it's really nice. And the hoop houses allow us both those things, to keep our employees busy as well as to have income year round, and then for working with folks like this that we work with in other restaurants, to be able to have product for them year round as well. I'm sure they'll talk to it, but, you know, it's probably nice, pretty nice, I think, at least from our end, and I think from their end, to, you know, not have to switch vendors all the time. Sure, you're getting different things from different vendors, but to know that, you know, you're going to have Michigan products at least, you know, 10 and maybe up to 12 months of the year. So I'm going to say that, you know, we are also involved with the farming community, like you said, through my position in the Department of Horticulture and with the Center for Regional Food Systems here at MSU. So we're part-time, depending on the time of the year, either 4 days a week in the winter or more like 2 days a week in the summer at MSU here, working with farmers around the country doing similar things. So mostly small to mid-scale farmers, I would say in the less than 20 acres, some we work with that have 50 or so, but mostly less than 20 acre farmers who are also trying to run their businesses year round using hoop houses and growing indoors and outdoors. It's probably important to say that we're not certified organic. We're what I've lovingly heard referred to as functionally organic. And so I've been trying to find a word, and someone from Vermont brought that up two months ago. So we follow rules and regulations for the USDA National Organic Program. But we thought that we would be certified organic. That was our plan. We kept records. We still could be if our markets asked us to be. But we've talked really closely with the restaurants that we work with, the people that we sell to at the farmers market, and then also the two other farms that we sell to. And none of them have asked us to be certified organic. So again, we have that option. We do follow the rules and regulations, use what's allowable. But for our business or our plan or our bottom line, it saves us about $1,000 a year, and our market's not asking us for it, so we've not gone down that road. So again, we sell to about 7, depending on the time of the year, up to 9 restaurants in the Lansing area, from Williamston over to the west side of Lansing, and then down south to Mason. So that's kind of the area that we operate in. And then the farms that we sell to, one is in Mason, and another is actually in Flint. It's a woman that I work with here that also farms similar to me. She's part-time at MSU and full-time farming, and they have a Michigan product store, and they supplement from other farms and also from other Michigan-based businesses. So I think another important thing to say is that you know, what we're doing or why we're doing it is, as a business, we're in it to make money. And as farmers, I think that we need to be able to talk about that in a straight shooting way and be honest about it. And there are a number of people that we work with that I think we could call them lifestyle farmers or homesteaders, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's not meant to be a derogatory term or anything like that. You know, people that are trying to grow for themselves or their families or friends or nearby neighbors. And I think that that's great. We work with, again, a number of people, both on a personal level, friends that are doing that, including our neighbors, and also people around the country as well that are interested in that. But for us, it's a business, and you know, as we think about sustainability, that in our mind we are conscious of the environmental sustainability, and we are conscious of what we pay our employees and what we provide. But at the same time, the way we look at it is that if we're not economically viable and economically sustainable, all of those other very important pieces that are, whether they're called philosophical or personal, are, none of that stuff can happen in our mind if we are not economically sustainable. And so, our model with working with restaurants and selling to other farms and selling at one farmer's market that runs year round is to have these diversified markets so that if something happens that we aren't, all our eggs aren't in one basket as far as, where our income and sales are coming from or going to. Sounds good? All right, so we'll pass it on to Nina.
My name is Nina Santucci, and we started our business here in Lansing about 4 years ago. My husband and I originally grew up in East Lansing, and then when I went to college, kind of spent the next 10 years of my life bouncing around the country. And always working in restaurants, and always with a strong emphasis on seasonality. So we were most recently in Philadelphia, ready to open up our own place, and I thought coming back to Michigan would be a great thing to do, because I like the whole cooking seasonally and what comes with that. And Michigan is, as far as that goes, a pretty cool place to be. you've maybe heard the fact before that we're second most diverse to California. So obviously everyone knows of California as being kind of an agriculture heaven, but Michigan's pretty close behind it. The diversity we get is incredible. Not only do we have incredible produce, but so much livestock is raised here. There's obviously the amazing breweries. We're getting a ton of distilleries. I mean, it's really just becoming a booming place if you are a food and beverage lover. So being from East Lansing, we thought this maybe would be a place that we could come to, but I hadn't been here for about 10 years. And the first thing I noticed is that there was an awful lot of chain restaurants. And I had been living in much more diverse places where there certainly are chain restaurants, but the normal would have been a lot of, you know, small mom and pop places. So that's why we opened up our food truck. It seemed like a much smaller commitment, and if it didn't work, we had a food truck that we could take elsewhere. The original plan was to do a couple months in the summer here in Lansing and then to bring it up to Traverse City and do a couple months up there and just kind of see, was there a market for what we wanted to do in either place? And after opening up here in Lansing, we just had a phenomenal first season and didn't really have any reason to leave, and so this is where we decided to set our roots. Before we opened, it was just 4 years ago, we were hooked up with Adam and his wife Drew, and I'll never forget that meeting in their kitchen table talking about what should they grow and how much would we need. And it was just such a funny conversation because I don't think either of us had a clue of what we were getting into. And the quantities that we gave, I mean, I don't even know. I mean, it was just so silly. I mean, it was just like, I don't know, maybe we're going to need 10 pounds of lettuce a week. We just had no clue. And I think we probably blew past what either of us had anticipated, which was great. It was really great to know that in a town that's full of chain restaurants, there actually was a desire and a want for all of this phenomenal food that we're growing. And I thought it was really sad to see how much things were being produced here and then just leaving the state, some of which to get shipped back in and resold to us, which is just such a funny way to run things. So to be able to go straight to the source and to be buying almost all of our ingredients from people who I know their name, I've been to their house, I've met their family. It was just a cool thing to be able to do. But the real question was, can we continue to do this? Is this a sustainable practice? Which is obviously important. And as Adam said, you know, the bottom line is this is a business. And one of our biggest challenges early on was this act of buying from these farmers who are taking a pair of scissors and clipping lettuce greens to sell to me, and to explain to a customer that, yes, this was grown a couple of miles from here, but as it turns out, this costs quite a bit more than what you can buy from Sysco or the grocery store or whatever else. And so that was our kind of beginning challenges, was training the people who we were serving that what we're preparing and giving to you, we're working with who I believe to be some of the best farmers in the state. I mean, the things that we get are just unbelievably beautiful, and you hate to even cook them because I just want to show people, like, look at this produce that somebody grew. I mean, someone I know actually pulled this out of the ground, and it's just, you know, I have a million pictures in my phone of just trays of produce because it's just so cool. I mean, we've worked with a lot of great restaurants who bring in great produce, but to actually get everything hand-delivered by the person that grew it, I mean, it was a pretty fun thing to go through. So after our first season was, you know, in our mind a successful year, we decided that we could put down roots and open up a restaurant here in town. So about a year later, we opened up Red Haven, which was in October of 2012. And we wanted Red Haven to have its own identity separate from the truck. The truck was always kind of more of your street food, kind of fun, quirky lunch place. But Red Haven was meant to be more of a dinner experience and to then kind of elevate that food to the next level. And so we kind of took the focus that we had on the truck with using the farmer connections that we had created, and then kind of took it a step further. So our bar program features all Michigan spirits. Any spirit that's made in Michigan, that you'll never see a Hendrick's gin. So all of the gins we serve are Michigan gins. Of course, there's things we can't get from Michigan, and then we'll outsource them. Our beer program is all domestic or Michigan beers, and then our food obviously continues that. When we opened the restaurant, we sourced All of our tables and bars were made from reclaimed wood from Michigan barns. And we really just tried to kind of source as much as we could from the state because we're really proud of what we have to show. And I think, you know, it's really important that we don't just support the farmers in the summer when it's convenient and we can say, yeah, you've got heirloom tomatoes, I'm going to buy them, but to be able to support them year-round and use the ingredients that maybe aren't so popular, to have someone say, like, I absolutely hate rutabaga, I will not try it, and say, you know what, I've got something that I think you're going to like, give rutabagas a shot, they're not so bad. And I'd say 9 times out of 10, we can convert people. The other thing that I think has been really great for us sourcing from these farmers, you know, there's the expense part where a lot of times things are more expensive. And in my opinion, you're paying for a better product. It's fresher, should have a longer shelf life. We have very minimal waste, which is great. The other thing is that in those heights of the season, I can pretty much get basil for free. People are giving away squash, things like that. So it kind of counterbalances at times when things might seem to be a bit more expensive. But what I think is really the best is the fact that I have access to the people who are growing this, and I can now bring in something that no one else can get. So it may be Adam says, hey, we've got these cucumber blossoms. What do you think? I've never seen them on a plate before. They're beautiful. Let's try them. And they work great. And someone else bring us shallot root. I don't know what you guys think about these roots, but I think if you fry them up, they might be good. And so we are able to decorate our plates with all parts of the plant that you can't buy from the supermarket, you can't get from a big box company. And I think that allows us to constantly remain innovative and putting new different things forward and getting people to try new things, which has been probably one of my favorite parts of this restaurant, is that we've over the years, I think, gained a lot of trust from our customers that we can put what people might think is something very strange out. And before we talk about putting it on the menu, it's kind of with the thought that this is probably not going to fly. This is probably going to be on the menu for a week, and then we're going to take it off. And we're always wrong. It always sells well. The more unusual things that we do, the more people buy it. And in such a kind of conservative market where you don't see a lot of innovation in the restaurants around here, I think it's really exciting to see that people have an interest in trying new things, and there is no reason that we can't, you know, have things that a Chicago market has. There's people here who have a disposable income who are willing to spend money, and I think the more that they're introduced to these ideas, the more that they're willing to try it and embrace it. And so my hope is just that we'll see a continued trend, that behind us will be many more restaurants that are kind of back to that mom and pop where the owner's working in the restaurant and it's not just these kind of vacant faces where you don't know where your food's coming from. It probably wasn't made in the state. You know, all these things get made, packaged, and then shipped in. There's not a lot of cooking involved. And so to kind of bring it back to basics is really what we're trying to do, is growing with what's in season, what's in our backyard. And like I said, for us, we're pretty lucky because there's just so much stuff. We this year for the first time got pawpaws in, which is a tropical fruit grown in Michigan. And so that's wild that in the same month I can get a tropical fruit grown in Michigan while I'm getting squash and all of these things, and I can put it together and I can cook a plate where every single item on that dish was grown here in the state, and it's such a diverse, crazy plate. Now we have all sorts of oils and vinegars, and the list goes on and on and on. I mean, every week I think we're getting in a new supplier of someone who's doing something very interesting, and it's an exciting time, I think, to be cooking and a business operator in this business in Michigan. So that's my story. Oh, you got your mic.
All right. Once again, my name is Jason. I'm the chef at the Soup Spoon Cafe. And if you're unfamiliar with the history, about 8 years ago when Nick, the owner, started the restaurant, it was a really small east side neighborhood, 5 days a week, just doing breakfast and lunch. So basically, he created a business. He created a job for himself, with hardly any staff. So over the years, we've grown and much bigger, and try to incorporate as much local ingredients, locally sourced, regionally sourced, from around the area, through directly with farmers and also through some distributors, because there's a number of distributors that distribute Michigan products around the state. One of which I work with is Monroe Family Farms Organics, and it's his produce is wonderful. It's great to be able to have, as a chef, super great quality product to work with. You know, when you have good product, your creativity, it just makes your food wonderful, because it gives you all, inspires new ideas, and it tastes awesome. And, you know, a lot of dealing with farmers and your distributors is, you know, how do those systems work? You know, the local and regional distribution. With his farm, he emails me a list of everything he has available. I email him back, I say, all right, six of this, 10 of this, and then he delivers it, you know, pulls that produce out of the ground, washes it with his own hands, and it's delivered right fresh to my back door. So it's just an awesome thing, and it's so exciting in this area, because I'm going on 19 years since I graduated culinary school, and I have to say, you know, in the last 5 to 10 years in this area, the number of farmers and regional ingredients that are available and marketed to restaurants has grown. I mean, I can't accommodate every farmer, because I have relationships built up and I have people approach me, and, you know, I'm not going to cut out someone else's business. You know, I'd love to help everybody, but you can't always. You know, I mean, back, you know, if you wanted the kind of produce ingredients we get now, you would have to be like the romantic TV chefs, where they show the chef going to the market in the morning, buying all his products for, you know, a special for the night. And honestly, it's a super hard business. Anyone that works in a restaurant will tell you how many hours they work, long, hard hours. So the reality is you don't have time to be going and buying produce every morning. I mean, in fact, there's not really a market available that you can go to every day in this area. So you have to pick and choose. I mean, you know when the markets are gonna be. But it's just something that I think is growing. You know, like the Michigan beer, all those brewers, they've been seeing double-digit growth. And the spirits, I'm sure they'll be seeing double-digit growth as well. So I feel like the regional, local in Michigan in this area is just a win-win for everybody, and I see it continuing that way in the future. I mean, it's kind of weird how things work, because if you think, like, the Depression days and the way society changes how people think about food and how they get their food, it's like everything used to be regional and local, because distribution was tough, you know, refrigeration was tough, and then it swings to such a global scene, which in some cases is not bad, because I can order asparagus 365 days a year, you know, certain ingredients if you want it, but so much better quality when you're getting local produce from farmers. And it's been exciting for me, because I mean I used to try to create little relationships so I can incorporate more of those things in my menu over the years, and a lot of times it wasn't possible, because a lot of it has to do with your relationships and the distribution process. Because you know, it used to be the farmers, you know, they didn't want to deliver it necessarily to your door. I mean, they wanted to sell to you, but they wanted you to come pick it up. And oftentimes, a lot of restaurants dealing with purveyors, they like to deal with terms. So, you know, a lot of farmers don't want to give you, you know, 7 days, 14 days to pay after delivering your products. There's a lot of intricacies in running a business and trying to make money that, you know, you have to negotiate. But the way it is now, there's just so many more options out there, and so much more understanding, I feel, between the farmers and the restaurant owners and chefs on how we can come together and use these products and, you know, be a part of the community together and make it a smooth process for everyone. I really hope that this continues, because there's a lot of areas that I feel like there's still room for growth. Produce is an easy one to get a lot of products on a consistent basis. Now, when you go into like meat and dairy products or eggs, for a larger restaurant, finding a producer that can actually handle the demands of what you need. Because when you're a smaller farm to table, you can, you know, buy a half or a whole hog, for instance, and, you know, create dishes and use the whole product. But in other times, you know, like in our restaurant, we have certain demand for, I need a certain number of beef tenderloins. You know, and to put something on my menu and have local, you know, fillets year-round or, you know, for seasonal menu, some of that stuff's tough. And I can tell you, the amount of volume we do at the Soup Spoon Cafe for breakfast, this last weekend I went through hundreds of dozens of eggs. And it's really hard to find. We used to buy from a local farmer all our eggs, and I haven't been able to find anybody with the capacity to produce, you know, a local product that can meet our needs. So I feel there's a lot of room for some of the other areas outside of produce to expand, and I'm excited about a lot of the restaurants that are popping up, like your restaurant and some of the others that are all using, you know, local ingredients, because there's a number of good examples around Lansing, East Lansing, of restaurants that are independently owned that are dealing a lot with, you know, the local farmers, and you know, chain restaurants, I'm kind of happy they don't jump on the same bandwagon we're on, because that's one of the things that helps make us unique, is that, you know, we have stuff that we get from farmers that no one else has and no one else has available. And I'm blown away sometimes, you know, if you go into a chain restaurant and they don't even feature any Michigan beer. And they're missing out on, you know, what the community wants. I mean, I can, you know, you can buy a $2-3, you know, major brewed beer, but people are, you know, they demand that, they want the extra quality. You know, $5 for a Michigan craft beer is, you know, that's what they want. And I feel that, you know, with a lot of the food, the same thing. If I bring on a feature, for instance, I've Michigan-sourced venison from northern Michigan, and if I put that on a feature for a special on the weekend, you know, sure, the price point might be high, but people are willing to buy it because, I mean, it's the quality's phenomenal, and it's a Michigan product.
Great pictures of the food that you serve.
Oh, thank you.
Let's open it up for questions.
Okay. I'm Susie Techmeyer. I'm the Agriculture and Horticultural Librarian at Grand Lansing Libraries. My question is, what, when you plant crops as a farmer, Adam, do you consult with the restaurants on what they may want for, like, let's say there's a pink tomato or something like that? And they, oh, this would be really cool to grow. Do you consult with the restaurants before you plant that to see if they actually have a market for it? And also, as from a restaurant point of view, if you know there is something special that you're going to want to put on the plate during certain months, do you consult with your local farmers to see if they can't grow that for you? Do you have that kind of interaction at all?
I think yes. It kind of goes both ways. I think that there's always an intent and a plan, and so this time of the year, before everyone plants, you generally have those conversations. What do you think you're going to want this year? But it's also a farm, and it can go a lot of ways. So we might have had a plan to have this coming in, and maybe there was a ton of rain, and all those seeds got washed away, and that plan goes away, and now you adjust. And so maybe I wasn't planning on buying the 20 rows of green beans that Adam was growing, but now that this crop's out, I'm going to take it and I'm going to make use of it. So I think that as much as you can plan, you try to. And for us, there's so many things, like there's so many farmers in the area, and one of the issues that you'll have is that someone will call and say, hi, I'd like to sell to you, I've got 5 pounds of tomatoes, and it's laughable. It's like, okay, that's going to get me through like five dishes tonight. Like, I need much more than that. But it's those unusual crops that no one's growing that really can make a farmer stand out and become more crucial to you because you're getting things that not everyone has. So I think we try to plan, but I don't think it doesn't always go according to plan, I would say.
Yeah, and I agree to add on to that it's, you know, when we start working with a new restaurant, we usually give them a seed catalog and late in the year, in maybe November, and say, go through and, you know, circle this. When we first started working together, we did that for a couple of years, and, you know, with the knowing that, you know, we're not going to, if you circle 40 different things that we don't grow, we're not going to like suddenly just grow all those things, but we are probably growing some of them already, plus where we can add, you know, one or two or something like that into our mix. And the nice thing too is that most of the restaurants have either specials that they're able to run and or, you know, changing menus at different periods of the year and in different increments. And so, I mean, the really nice thing is that the shortest thing we grow takes 21 days. You know, the longest thing we grow takes 110 days. So when we plant stuff, I can shoot out texts. Like, we do all our ordering through texts, and I can shoot pictures and say, hey, we have this. It's going to be ready in 5 weeks, or it's going to be ready in 8 weeks, or it's going to be ready in 2 weeks. And then they're able to either run specials or to be thinking about when they do a menu change, you know, what is going to be coming up next. And then, you know, if the other piece with the volume is, I feel fortunate that, you know, we, like Nina said, we've pretty much grown together here over the last 5 years, that, you know, being able to scale up and work with, as other restaurants are scaling up or new restaurants come in as well, we've been able to up our production knowing, and we've been able to invest, you know, in infrastructure or other things to be able to scale that up, knowing that market's there, as opposed to just, you know, jumping in and putting a bunch of infrastructure in and not knowing. It's kind of like them, you know, them doing a food truck and then the bricks and mortar. It was us doing, you know, one hoop house and now having seven of them. You know, it's been able to grow as the restaurants have grown around here.
Yeah, adding that, I really don't have to do a lot of planning with the farmers I deal with, because if it's not, a lot of the products they use are not necessarily spelled out on the menu specifically. So, you know, for instance, pretty soon it'll be asparagus season. So, you know, local asparagus, that'll be my vegetable of the day, you know. When tomatoes, you know, tomatoes for salads, you know, I obviously use tomatoes now. They're not local yet. But when they do come in season, and I change over, and no one's obviously going to complain about that. And also we feature six soups every day. So, you know, in addition to specials, I'm able to absorb, you know, a lot of unique offerings that they have available and just be creative, you know, with soups. And, you know, we go through a large quantity, so I'm able to use, you know, a large amount of product in those applications as well.
You know, one of the things that really strikes me, the fluidity of this process, which differs so much from the franchise restaurants, you know, they get the tomato for wherever year round. They get the product wherever year round. But because your process is fluid, it also, I think, really educates the customer or the consumer. Oh, this is available now because it's this time of year in Michigan, and oh, we have a lot of asparagus. I mean, I find that experience too when I go to farmers markets. You start subliminally get this education about, oh, there's lots of this now, or why there's not greens because it's been 25 below for the last week or so. And even if there's a hoop house, there's constraints on it. I mean, it's a very interesting process that I think does help educate whether you're going to a restaurant or whether you're going to a farmer's market and you're buying something locally. You get to learn what's in season or why something isn't available a certain time of year. And I think that's an educational process that brings us, weren't farmers, closer to the land in a way.
Well, and I think also when you're eating food seasonally, it really makes sense. You know, in the winter you're eating all those root vegetables when you really want that rich, hearty food, and then in the summer when things get much lighter, and you know, it really, if you're eating with what's in season, it makes sense. You don't want to be eating watermelon in January. It just doesn't taste quite as good as when it's really hot and
and you're slicing into it.
How do you guys, from both sides of the fence, determine pricing? Especially like in the winter, if you were to come across, you know, some greens and the market's not bearing that, I mean, do you gouge? How's the flexibility work at setting prices?
I think it kind of works as if you're buying from anywhere. You have a certain food cost that you have to hit, and if I'm getting early strawberries the first of the season and they cost more and I'm doing a dish with strawberries, it's going to be reflected on that dish. But alternatively, when I'm getting tomatoes pretty much given to me and I serve tomatoes, it's going to be reflected in that as well. So I think you just, for us at least, I don't know how you guys do it, but we just operate food costs just as we always do. There's a certain percentage that we have to hit to try to be profitable, and that's just how it goes. So
yeah, I'd have to agree with that. As far as it goes for me when I'm dealing with purveyors, there's not a whole lot of haggling back and forth. It's like she said, if something's super expensive at the beginning of the season, but if I'm willing to bear that cost, then the pricing will reflect that. And on the other hand, if something's really expensive and I don't feel I really need it, I'm just not going to purchase it. So it just really depends.
And I would say from our end that, for things especially like tomatoes, early strawberries, things like that, we have higher prices early in the year and then they drop off a little bit later in the summer. But most of our products are the same cost year-round, and I worked in restaurants for a long time before farming, and so, you know, the way that I look at it is, say, you know, all of our baby salad, whether it's mixed or whether it's baby just arugula or baby mizuna or baby kale or whatever, it's $7.50 a pound all year long. And the reason we do that is because I don't want their salad to cost them this much in the summer and then the same salad to cost them this much and they've got two different salad prices. And the way I look at it from our end is that that's probably a little high in the summer and it's probably a little low in the winter. So I feel like those balance out and that keeps, you know, their food cost similar, and it makes my QuickBooks easier too for invoicing. I don't have to be like, you know, okay, November 1 hits and suddenly this salad is now this much and which one do I click on? You know, so we've kind of, except for like those specialty things, we've really tried to maintain the same prices year round.
Is there a difference in health code when you guys are dealing with a different, not the conventional supply chain for your produce? Is there a difference in how you handle that legally?
No. Pretty much different farmers are licensed differently. So meat, for example, all has to be USDA certified. And so before it comes to me, it essentially goes through that certification process. Produce is a much more loose situation than meats are. But pretty much I just need to give a list of who I'm purchasing from to the health department, and they approve the list. But meats and eggs have a higher regulation. You probably know more about the regulation than I do, but.
Sure, yeah, so in Michigan, you know, anything that's fresh, uncut, unprocessed fruits and vegetables is allowable. You know, or as soon as we would start to cut something, say, instead of taking, it's not a harvest cut. So like salad mix, you're cutting it once, or like head lettuce, you're cutting it once to harvest it. That's a harvest cut, and that's not considered processed. If we were to start chopping up lettuce or romaine heads or in delivering a product that was cut like that, that becomes a processed product and needs to be done in a certified kitchen that's been inspected by MDARD. And then, yeah, so for the meats, it has to be done in a USDA inspected facility to be able to be served. Eggs are as well. There are certain regulations with those. And then, you know, from our end with Food Safety Modernization Act stuff coming down the pipeline and them still trying to figure out what that's going to look like, you know, there'll be some changes on our end, but that won't affect anything that they do. That's more things that will potentially have to do if they ever figure out what that is going to look like.
Yeah, adding to that, all those items, the particular items that I'm kind of leery of, that I don't purchase, are some of the foraged items like mushrooms. I only buy those through a distributor. Certainly like during morel season, other times of year, people approach me and and want to sell me mushrooms. And I, just for a comfort factor, I prefer to let a distributor buy those items, and then I can purchase them from them, you know, just out of basic, you know, liability, you know, just to be safe.
And maybe that's important to say that in the beginning of April, there's new legislation going into effect for forage products. And you now, to sell mushrooms, I have to be certified by the state to be a forager. And the first course is happening up in Traverse City area. It's not April 11th, but it's sometime around there. So that they're now, because of that, either to restaurants or at markets, to be able to sell any of those products. And the mushrooms is the first one. And I think there's 20 species that they've identified now for those very yeah. real and very yeah. concerning
I mean,
reasons.
I do a lot of foraging yeah. myself, and fortunately, before I started doing any foraging, being a chef, I've handled many morels and black trumpets, and actually physically have seen them without having to just do it from a book. So, yeah. But I still for liability, yeah, I'm only going to buy through approved sources.
Sure. So we, at our farm, we don't do boxes or CSAs. Both my wife and I have worked on CSA farms together and separate from each other. We have a number of friends who do CSAs, so we don't do that. We do occasionally have recipe cards that go out, but for the most part, you know, the market that we're in Bath for our farmers market is a fairly conservative, you know, they're looking for, like, you know, red tomatoes and maybe some, you know, some colored ones, but the heirlooms are, there's a few people that buy from us, but it's mostly, you know, red slicing tomatoes and green cucumbers and, you know, onions and potatoes. It's still pretty traditional. But if we do have something, like we had fennel this year, and we talked to people about, you know, what to do with it, and had recipe cards for doing that. And so maybe the other thing I should say, that, you know, Nina said that they get produce in and don't want to do anything with it. I mean, one of the things that we love as farmers is being able to go and eat at the restaurants that we sell to, and I think if I feel the same way that she feels about that, is I'd love to go there and see what they do with our products and with other farms' products also. And like Fred at Monroe, Fred and I were undergrads together. It's great to see, you know, people that are kind of our mid-30s right now, farmers that a lot of us that came through MSU or were involved, have crossed paths somewhere along, and to see all these people out there doing, you know, running farming businesses and selling to restaurants and, you know, running into each other is something that I think is really an amazing part of being in this community. And I think, and I won't speak for you guys, but we've all been around Lansing / greater Lansing area for a big chunk of our lives. And I think it's really amazing what's happening here right now, that, you know, it's been happening in Grand Rapids for a long time. It's been happening in Ann Arbor for a long time. It's been happening in Chicago. It's been happening in Traverse. It's been happening in Detroit. And we talked about it in the same way that you did, of, you know, should we move to Traverse City or should we move to outside Chicago and farm there? There's this market that's established that's, you know, huge market. And I think right now in Lansing, it feels pretty incredible to be part of a community that is doing this in an area that, like, it hadn't been happening in. And seeing, just like Nina said, seeing the response of, like, people want this stuff and people want these products and people want these restaurants. And it's really, I think, a unique situation where we're at in this greater mid-Michigan area to see it happening from, you know, very, just being a part of it from the get-go. And I think that that's really, it's really a pretty amazing thing to see happening here, that everyone who's been here for a long time has now said, like, God, I've wanted restaurants that I can go to like this for so long. And that, you know, almost everyone or most people are, their businesses are surviving and doing well.
Well, thank you all so much. Really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.